relationship between humans and time here in this region. And so slowly we met, our team expanded with Gail Fritz because of her work in Cahokia. And the team kept expanding when we met Rob Connolly. And also Susan Boswick, who couldn't be here tonight. And I wanted to say a few things about what we've been doing. We've been talking about seeds and humans and time going back 4,000 years. So if you think about native plants, think about what you might think are native plants that we see today, let's dial that back quite a bit further. To what, in fact, this area was a center of biodiversity and a region where there were a lot of plants and humans getting established. And some of those crops we see today, some of those crops we don't, those are the lost crops. And think about the crops like corn that we see everywhere. Well, that wasn't here 4,000 years ago. So when we're talking about plants and people and this idea of post-natural landscape, that is the co-evolution of people and plants together over time through selective breeding, there's a lot of pieces to that story. So that's what I want to start with. I want to introduce the partners. So Natalie Miller is a professor at Washington University. Gail Fritz is a recently retired professor. Rob Connolly, Chef Rob Connolly, is the chef at Woolworth Restaurant, and I wanted them to introduce a little bit about their work, and we'll talk a little bit about what we'll expect tonight. Okay. Gail, do you want to start?
So, Mel and I have been working on studying lost crops. Gail's been studying lost crops for
30 years. And I've been studying them for about 7. And what we're talking about is we have all this incredible agrobiodiversity that was created by indigenous people in Eastern North America.
And a lot of it is still with us, like crops like sunflowers and maize and squashes and beans that were developed and diversified by indigenous farmers. But there are a lot of other crops that have fallen by the wayside over the years and that we only really know about through the archaeological record. So we've been studying these crops through the archaeological record for a long time. We can still find their wild ancestors, or wild relatives, I should say, on the landscape today. And so what I've been doing recently is growing them, cultivating them, to try and understand what it would have been like to grow these plants on purpose, not just to collect them as means of the roadside. And it turns out that if you treat them well, they actually look completely different. They respond to humans in a way that really shocked and surprised me. It made me see plants in a completely different light. So that's really cool. And what I'm not going to say any more about lost crops because I could go on about. What I'm really excited about tonight is that up until really recently, like a few weeks ago, when Rob served us me and Gail crackers and seasoned them in his restaurant, we didn't have any idea what they tasted like or how to cook them. And people have been asking us this for years, and it's a really, like, we need to know the answer to this question. So I just want to encourage you all to experiment with this yourself, because we're going to have to recreate it through experimentation and work with people to make it better. And it'll be really exciting to try what Rob has come up with. Yeah.
Thank you, Natalie. So I have been studying the lost crops and the other crops that are not lost that were grown here in Eastern North America, and many of which were domesticated here. And it's so necessary to acknowledge the native farmers, going back for thousands of years as they started to bring some of the squash, the native squash, and the Chenopodium valens quarter relative that you're going to try tonight and the others into domestication. And not only is it all of the native groups going so far back, it's specifically the women. We think that the women were the domesticators and the women then were the farmers. And there's really no argumentation about that because of the way things were historically at contact. And so not only did they domesticate these plants, that some of which have just sort of reverted to weedy looking things, but when corn was introduced, when maize was introduced, they figured out how to make the most of it, to make it productive and to make it to make it adaptable to the climate, to the soils. They were scientists. They were agronomists. They were soil and crop scientists. And they were, I think they made their own decisions. I don't think that they were beholden to any really elite. I think the women were elite. They were highly respected and they were highly knowledgeable. And they, we owe them everything. And I wish we had been here to teach us how to cook maygrass. Because the times that I have tried to cook maygrass, it was not edible. And that was one of the most important of the lost crops. So thank you for all of the wisdom, the traditional spiritual wisdom, and all of the scientific knowledge. And I'm going to pass it.
So at Bull Rush, we focus on historic Ozark cuisine. And if you were to come into the restaurant, you would hear me give a speech that my staff has heard me now say thousands of times, that what we look at is 1820 to 1870 in the Ozarks, and what that food might look like in 2019. I'm happy to share more about that story later, but that's not why we're here tonight, but it explains why I am here. Because Justin and I, my sous chef who's over there in the apron, we focus on the foraging aspects of the restaurant. And we are almost exclusively locally sourced, and there's so much forage that it just blows away our customers. In our research for Bull Rush, we're looking at letters and family scrapbooks and family journals from that time period, and the project never ends as far as the research goes. We have a history intern from SLU. How many restaurants have a history intern? And this weekend, he was working through some of the databases, and I'm getting ready to go to Little Rock to look at some more. And what we're looking for now are some of the populations that are not as easily represented in the work that we've already done. So we're looking for the indigenous people, the enslaved people, smaller populations like the Swedes and Swedenborg. I don't know if that's really a thing, but that's where we're heading next in our research. And that brings me to tonight. So when Natalie came in, I'm not sure who came first, Lynn or Natalie, and I gave this speech, they said, well, we're doing this project about the Mississippi. And I said, that's great, but by definition, the Mississippi is not the Ozarks, because the Ozarks is a plateau by definition. And they said, you're thinking in hundreds of years. We think in thousands of years. And that opened a whole new door to us at the restaurant, because now we're looking at plants that Justin and I were certainly aware of, but they were low value plants to us. They're too much work to get a productive level of food for the customers. It's not food that customers would say, oh, I've been craving lamb's quarter seeds. Please have some. No, they don't want that. And so the challenge has been, as Natalie suggested, making this enjoyable to modern diners. And in thinking about how I wanted to frame the night, besides having beer on one end and beer on the other end, I also thought framing it in terms of what is the challenge? Why have these foods gone out of fashion? Is it because they're too hard to work with? Is it disease? Is it flavor, or is it just fashion? We have foods that fall out of fashion, we just don't like them anymore because we don't like them anymore. Exploring what those reasons are helps inform what we can do in the future, and reclaiming these foods and the stories that they've told through the past is what's exciting to me. So instead of taking my 19th century letter and retelling that story, we take archaeologic information and retell that story. So that's what we're going to be doing tonight. We have four different stations that we'll have on the table. And we're going to encourage you tonight to not just walk down the line. Tonight's not about walking down the line, getting your food on a plate and walking away. It's about interacting with the four of us who will be on the table. We have a little bit to tell you about the dishes that we're serving. We're going to be on both sides of the table. But our hope is you'll visit one station, your peers and friends, grab a beer and talk about that dish. And then go back for the next one. those of you who have voracious appetites, eat however you want. But know that the food is there, and we hope that you'll enjoy the night and spend some time with your colleagues and interacting with nature and the food and some of the folks who have expertise that can share some of their wisdom. Thank you.
You can only imagine what it's been like for us to all meet and talk over these past few months. I wanted to say a few more things about how some of the important work that isn't necessarily represented here, which is the enactment piece, which is the act of growing seeds, the act of gardening, the act of finding materials in the landscape and making clay vessels from them, the act of cooking, that act of knowledge and tradition and culture that we pass on through our actions and that we've been doing collectively. That's a very big part of this that's been going on as we've been working together. And a writer that I really like, Janissa Ray, says that a seed is hope. And it's, you know, when you think of it, it's got all this information in it, it's this package of information. And if you think about all the death that's going on in the world right now, the seed is life. So I find that very inspiring. And, so, and soon that seeds are a big part of the theme for tonight. The other thing I wanted to say is about the narrative. Something that's really important to me is that we're not telling you a narrative here. Donna Haraway calls it a heterogeneous collective memory. And what I want to point out is that what I think that means is that basically we all tell these stories in our own words. And so that's the narrative tonight, is us having these conversations, sharing this information, taking that, and then we are part of this collective narrative about the history of our place, the American bottom, where we are here, the history of our seeds, the history of our people, what's been lost and what's been gained. So that's the, you know, the way that I have seen this project, and I think we're gonna have some really great food. I do need to say thank you to a few people. Let's start with our team. Let's start with Jesse, Matt, and all of the other people who've been our colleagues this whole time in this Anthropocene journey, the St. Louis Field Station, because tonight is the final night of events. So I hope that we can have a beer and enjoy ourselves. I'd like to say thank you to GCAD for hosting us here. Thank you to Cahokia Mounds, state site.
Future National Park.
Hopefully Future National Park, because they allowed us to curate a garden there this summer. They were great partners and hosted us every time we asked. I'd like to say thank you to Scratch Brewery. If you don't know it, I hope you get to try their beer. They've brought us two incredible beers, single source beers, and there will be a tasting for that. And then thank you to Urban Chestnut, who's also supplied beers for us. And thank you to the Center for American Archaeology, where Natalie had her garden this summer, and also who they were a big part of the conversations early on.
These seeds came from Cornell.
And these seeds.
Shout out to
these seeds that you're eating, I grew last year, and I was in Ithaca, New York. So thanks.
Shout out to Ithaca.
Thanks to the College of Agriculture.
All right. Anything else?
Please, no.
Okay. Blessing for the food.
Blessing
for the food, and then there will be a procession, and then we invite you to enjoy.
I don't think I need the microphone. Is everybody okay with this?
Yeah.
Laura's a great teacher. Ishimani Du, great creator, kind one. I ask you to look upon us, and we are grateful. We're grateful, and we ask for the medicine that's in this food to nourish us, to make us healthy. We ask you to help us to carry on the work that we have to carry on. And Ishimani, do we ask? dog. Mystique Buenidas. Mystique Buenidas, let it be so. So if you say amen, let it be so, let it be, or you can try. Mystique Buenidas.
Mystique Buenidas. I just wondered, since you're wearing such a high vis jumper, I wondered if would you be able to share that?
Actually,
you just took them up there.
I don't know. I feel like it's kind of like
yeah. We'll probably put it on the.
It sounded great.
Where's that gonna go? That picture. I don't know. You want it?
It might be just because I'm doing some the publishing for the Hack Bay on their website and on their field notes and stuff. I mean,
it's not that good a picture, but I can send it to you if you want. If you give us a card or an email or something.
I don't have a card. Could you just,
write it down?
Is that?
I don't know how to.
No. Okay. Don't worry.
Is
it? Well, I was just wondering if it was.
Do you want to see it first?
Yeah. Why not?